The Radio Ashford Feel Good Hour with Sam Griffin and Nigel Jones. Get set for the weekend with a healthier, happier you. Friday lunchtime from 12:30 on the Sam Griffin Show. Radio Ashford 107.1 FM or on your smart speaker.
Joining me, as always, for the Feel Good Hour is the wonderful Nigel Jones, a best-selling well-being author of Walking Back to Happiness, leading life coach, certified hypnotherapist, and the creator of 9 Kilometres by 9am. We'll cover what neurodiversity is, how common it is in the UK, the main profiles you've heard of, and simple tweaks that can make home, school, and work easier. Welcome, Nigel. How are you?
I'm really good, and it's great to be back, Sam.
It's great to have you back. I love the Feel Good Hour. I love our hours together every couple of weeks.
Love the new jingle.
It's a great jingle, right?
Yeah.
Loving it. Right, let's kick this off, really. What is neurodiversity? That's probably the main starting point.
Great question. Neurodiversity, it basically just means that brains come in different models. They're not broken, they're just different.
Yeah.
I suppose that's the easiest definition. I mean, if you want to sort of analogize it, some people might have a V12 engine as a brain. Yeah. Some might have a mini engine as a brain. Yeah. Others might not even have an engine. They might have a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
So everyone's different, basically.
Yeah. And actually, that's okay.
Yes.
You know,
exactly.
You know, it's absolutely okay. Now, neurodiversity is quite an umbrella.
Yeah.
Varying types of neurodiversity. How common is it?
It is really, really common. So the latest stats show there's been almost like an 800% increase in the diagnosis of autism and ADHD.
Yeah.
Over the last 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you look at the figures, I think the latest figures say there are around about 4.4% of the population, or 2.5 million people, have the neurotype ADHD.
Yeah.
And then if you look at autism or the autism spectrum, it's around about 1 to 2% of the population. So a million people there as well.
That's a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah. And then if you go into other types such as dyslexia, over 6 million people have some form of dyslexia.
Yeah.
And dyscalculia, which is with numbers, the neurotype with numbers, they estimate that 1 in 4 people have some form of challenge with maths or mathematics.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's you know, it's big.
Yeah, and I think also, which is I think it's really important to cover, is that when I was at school, we didn't have these diagnoses that often.
No.
And the support wasn't there for the children coming through school and into adulthood.
Yeah.
I think, why is it so different now? Do you think it's because people are now standing up and talking about it, being open about it? Or is it just kind of learning?
There's loads of reasons why there's that increase, that almost that 800% increase. I think, you know, there's just a greater awareness of the different neurotypes. And we're just learning more about it every day.
Yeah.
And with that improved knowledge, you know, people are actually accessing the internet and social media and finding out other people who've got different neurotypes.
Yeah.
And so there's more awareness generally.
Yeah.
of the whole area.
Mm.
And what's happening is, you know, workplaces are actually providing more things for employees who might have a neurotype, different neurotypes. So yeah, there's more going on. There's more diagnoses is happening. Even though there is a waiting list of I think it's over 500,000 people in the UK waiting to be diagnosed.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is just generally more awareness of it. So I guess it's not growing. It's just literally we're more aware of these types.
Yeah, and I think also, there was once, like you said, we just kind of touched on it there, that people in the public eye are being very open about it, and which I think is incredible. And it kind of, you know, nobody is normal. There is such thing as normal. We're all so different. And it's how we accept that and how we navigate that that is really important.
Yeah.
And I think having people stand up and say, you know, this is me, this is how my life is, and people doing videos about how their days are, and does give a real good insight for those that aren't neurodiverse to get an awareness of what's going on. But for those with a neurodiversity, also goes, oh, look, there's someone like me there.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that representation is incredible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were having a discussion earlier on before the show about the advantages or disadvantages of sort of being diagnosed. And I think, you know, it's different for children and adults. And
yeah.
I mean, with children, you know, having a diagnosis means you've got access to early support at school.
Yeah.
And, you know, your parents can understand your behaviour.
Yeah, yeah.
So it, you know, there could be some downsides, like there's the risk of stigma.
Yeah.
But I think the reality is that the advantages, you know, far
outweigh
the disadvantages. And from an adult perspective, you know, I think it gives you relief and clarity. I mean, it might, you know, a diagnosis might say to you as an adult, well, oh, that explains why I did that as a child, or I've been doing that. And so you can, you know, you can actually understand who you are better.
Yeah.
Disadvantages, there might be some regret that you didn't go earlier on to get diagnosis.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, there's, you know, it's good.
Yeah.
If you feel that you've got a certain neurotype, go and get a diagnosis if you can.
Absolutely. Get some help if you need it. Right, we're going to get a song on and then we're going to come back and chat a bit more. And Nigel Jones is with me and we're talking all about neurodiversity this lunchtime. Now, can you give us a quick guide? There's quite a few different neurodivergent profiles, but let's go through maybe the top three.
Okay.
And give people an idea of the strengths, because obviously it is a superpower in my mind.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the challenges that people can face. Yeah.
Yeah, so if we look at the autism spectrum, I mean, the difference is mainly there are like communication, sensory processing, and social interaction. But the strengths are pattern recognition.
Absolutely.
Highly focused.
Yeah.
Innovative. And deep expertise. I mean, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Challenges someone with autism will face vary. Could be sensory overload and difficulty with social interaction.
Yeah.
If we look at ADHD, the variation there is basically attention and attention regulation and hyperactivity.
Yeah.
So strengths in ADHD profile, normally creativity, high energy, rapid problem solving.
Yeah.
And challenges, organization, distractibility, impulse control.
Yeah.
So a few there. If we look at dyslexia, third one, basically that's all about differences in processing written language. And so the strengths are big picture thinking. I guess that's like a really important strength.
Yes.
Creativity is another, and problem solving. And the challenges, obviously, are reading, spelling, and sometimes working memory.
Yeah. There are many more, but those are the main three that we're going to kind of highlight today.
Yeah.
Now, for me, you know, when I did my teaching degree, I did it in special educational needs. So I have been fortunate enough to work with children from the ages of 3 to 12 who are on the neurodiversity spectrum. And also in my life as an adult, I work with people with neurodiversity. And I think the most important thing is differentiation.
Mm.
There is always ways to learn. And there's always ways to communicate. And we, as humans, are able to shift that. You know, we can go, okay, well, this person obviously needs some assistance in some way, or they need to be spoken to differently, or need to learn something in a different manner. You know, if there was a child that would not sit still, I would lay on the floor with them with a whiteboard and write, rather than writing in a book, or take them outside. People learn in different ways. And I think even as adults, as we go into adulthood, we can cope, but it's having the right coping mechanisms to have.
Yeah, completely. I mean, you were saying earlier on, again before the show, about blue paper.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very often, people with dyslexia can learn to read and be more, have people more aware of it if they kind of literally have blue paper, stuff that's written on blue paper, or for them to write on blue paper, something as simple as that. And there are apps and stuff nowadays that can do reading for you. So if you are out and about and you're dyslexic and you want to look something, you can have an app that reads it for you.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't have that growing up. And I think that there's a huge positive for modern technology is that we have these opportunities for people to access things when they are out and about now. And I think for me, inclusivity and diversity is very, very passionate for me. And I think there are still many, many avenues we need to cover for everybody to feel completely included.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's something that I'm, as you can tell, I'm quite passionate about it. Been around it quite a lot. So, so if you're looking at, say for instance, some traits, you know, masking and stimming, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there are sometimes very noticeable traits that people who might not be neurodiverse will be able to see.
Yeah.
And kind of resonate with. What does stimming and masking mean?
Okay, so stimming effectively is, it's normally associated with autism, but anyone can have this.
Yeah.
And it's like exhibiting like a behavior. It could be like waving your arms or nail biting or twirling your hair. It's basically a reaction to actually making you feel comfortable if you are that neurotype or you feel a bit uneasy. So in itself, you know, it's a repetitive behavior, and it sometimes, you know, it relaxes people who are doing it effectively. Yeah. Masking, on the other hand, is something that can have quite a negative effect in that you're covering up, the fact that you've got this neurotype or a neurotype.
Yeah.
And that's one of the challenges, is actually getting people to say, well, look, you can take that mask off. It's not important to have that mask on, because people are only putting those masks on because they feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you must see, I know you run this Unite nightclub once a month in Ashford.
It's actually on tonight. You know, when I worked for Find a Voice, which was a charity that supported adults with learning and communication difficulties, lots of many people, you know, carers and family members would say there's nothing for them to do of an evening. There's no social stuff for them to do. So I launched this Unite nightclub. It's going for 3 years now, and we do it once a month. Mm. And it's a space where people with learning communication difficulties, including those that are neurodiverse, can come along and experience what it's like to be in a nightclub environment. So we've got a bar, we have a tuck shop, we have DJ, we have lights.
Yeah.
And we see a lot of stimming there, because obviously some of our people that attend do that. But it's such a wonderful space. You know, some of them would not be able to access a normal nightclub because that kind of behaviour would be seen as strange. Mm. But actually, it's like you say, it's just a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And some of them are very subtle, some of them are not so. But actually, I quite love the fact that they're being able to be open and, you know, experience being around other people. And it's sad that we still find that in society there is that still difference. But I've, you know, we'll get there.
Yeah, and the worst thing is when people feel the need to actually mask that stimming.
And
so they're no longer sort of comforting themselves. Yeah. It's actually making them worse.
Yeah.
And you know, masking can happen, you know, for a number of reasons. It can be to avoid bullying, because you know they no one wants, you know, they don't want everyone to think there's something different about them, or diverse about them. So they mask for that. They mask to fit in socially, whether that be at school or in work or in relationships. Yeah. So it's right from, you know, right from childhood through to adulthood as well. Masking really comes in so many different forms as well. So you've got mimicking social behaviours is a good example, where people will learn how different facial expressions or tones of voice. Just to fit in.
Absolutely.
I mean, you must see this quite a lot.
Yeah, and I think also it's quite important to kind of put out there that children would often mask their behaviours because they were embarrassed by it or were scared. And I think it's obviously lots of research has been done about how women or girls would mask quite considerably. And so lots of girls would go under the radar within an educational setting because they were so good at masking their traits.
Yeah.
And I think which is a good thing now, that lots of women, And there's been a higher rate in diagnosis with women that are even going through the menopause being diagnosed with autism or ADHD because we've masked it for such a long time and we think our behaviour is normal.
Mm.
And actually, everyone's talking about it now. So why don't we kind of, like you said earlier on, do you know what? I've been like this all my life.
Mm.
Why don't I put a line under it and kind of deal with it?
Yeah, and you know, the impact of all this is terrible, really. I mean, you know, it literally can lead to sort of exhaustion, social burnout.
Yeah.
The stats show that there is a higher incidence of, you know, depression and potentially suicide amongst people who are masking.
You know,
particularly if it goes on for a long, long time. And you can lose your identity because you're actually becoming someone you're not. Yeah.
And we don't want people to do that, you know.
No, it's the worst thing you can do. Then, you know, you're not being yourself. And, yeah, that's so masking is not a good thing.
No.
It helps in the short term, the person doing it. But really, in the longer term, it's not good. And I think, you know, all of us should recognise that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's important, you know, just in, you know, when I see clients in the coaching world as well, just helping them take that mask off or giving them a space where they can take that mask off.
Completely agree.
Radio Ashford, feel good. I was Sam Griffin and Nigel Jones. Get set for the weekend with a healthier, happier you. Friday lunchtime from 12:30 on the Sam Griffin Show. Radio Ashford, one of Sam Bourne, one of them are on your smart speaker.
Nigel is with me chatting about neurodiversity this lunchtime. Now, we've covered a few bases before the news. Let's talk about how dopamine affects neurodiversity or our brains.
So before I get into dopamine, let's actually give a quick sort of overview of ADHD.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the dopamine angle is really linked to ADHD. So ADHD is the shortened term for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So you can see why it's shortened.
Yeah.
A lot easier to say.
Yeah.
So there are three types of ADHD, sort of core types. So you've got the inattentive type, and that's easily distracted, struggles to maintain attention during tasks or conversations. Then you've got the hyperactive type, or the impulsive type, and that's like fidgeting, tapping hands or feet, or moving around in your seat, difficulty staying still or seated, just always on the move. And then you've got a combined version of both. So those are the three types. And what ADHD can do is it can actually have quite severe effects at the extremes on people's timekeeping, mm-hmm. And prioritizing and planning, and so you know there are some quite severe downsides to this.
Yeah.
So if we then sort of come back and say, well, how does this all start? And you look at like dopamine. So dopamine is like a brain chemical which your body makes, and it's almost like, look at it as like a spark plug that tells your brain, you know, this is worth doing.
Yeah.
So in a sort of most people, that spark plug just gets set off quite easily. So if you've got a list to do on your calendar or to-do list, you know, that's enough for that spark plug to fire in most people. So it might be, I need to go to the gym, or I need to fill in my tax return, or I need to send that email. You'll get enough spark, enough dopamine to make you do it.
Yeah.
But in someone with ADHD or having that profile, their wiring's different, and basically the dopamine isn't handed out as easily. So therefore, someone with ADHD type profile might not want to do the things on that to-do list because they're seen as a bit boring, because there's no dopamine upside for it. So really, you need to make things, or we need to make things, or they need to make things, or more exciting. To get the dopamine going. And that's when you get into all these different strategies of how you can make things more exciting for some, if you've got ADHD, to actually get you to do stuff.
Yeah.
So a classic example, for example, is what you'd call time boxing. So if you've got an issue with doing something on a to-do list, then put it into a time box. Say, right, well, I'm going to give 20 minutes to that task, and I'm going to focus all my energy into that task for 20 minutes. And by doing that, you create like a dopamine target, and it releases dopamine because you've got 20 minutes, a time window to actually do the thing. So time boxing is quite an important thing. Or you can gamify something. You can set yourself challenges, which is effectively what a time box is to do stuff. That's the importance of dopamine in ADHD.
Yeah, I think with going from that, you can actually buy physical boxes that light up. So you put in a time, and it actually a bit like a timer, but it's visual. So it's got lights, different changing lights. So for somebody with ADHD who, anyone really can use it. If you're trying to do something within a time and you need the motivation, you need something to kind of keep you visually on track, the light box timers are great.
Yeah.
Because they can physically see the countdown.
Yeah.
So it's a really good tool. Really good tool to use.
There's something called the Pomodoro effect, and this was created by an Italian. I'm not sure when it was created, but it was in the last sort of 20 years or so, and it's to do with basically putting a time limit on your activity. So you set like a time of 25 minutes to do something. You always got, and you call that like a sprint. So the presumption is that you can do anything within 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you set that time limit, and it's called Pomodoro because he had like a timer which looked like a tomato. and he set it to 25 minutes, and that's why he did it.
Yeah.
And this is proven to be really successful, where you literally set every task you've got set at 25 minutes. If 25 minutes is too long for you, make it 15.
Yeah.
But you start setting chunks of time, and that's called the Pomodoro effect.
Yeah. I think also, and that also comes in just people that are suffering with their mental health, and they get up and they look at the diary and go, oh my goodness, that's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Same thing. You know, use the block of time and don't try and get everything done.
Yeah.
Just pick something. And then before you know it, you're in that routine, and then it's all kind of working. What everyday tools can listeners use to create change across neurodiversity?
I mean, if we focus on the ADHD thing, I think what we're talking about here with like dopamine.
Yeah.
So focusing on dopamine. There are ways you can stimulate dopamine quite quickly, and one of them is called the Zing method, which we'll put a link on the Radio Ashford website, so you can download a free worksheet on that on how to do the Zing method. But basically, it's all about balance. So and you can do this anytime. So if anyone's listening, obviously make sure you're in a safe environment.
Yeah, of course.
But just stand up and see if you can stand on one leg and balance on one leg and count to 10. And you can use your arms to balance you. And then after you've done that, switch legs. And then try it with your eyes closed.
Yeah,
or try it with your hands on your head. And what you're doing is you're building up resilience, and you're building up your balance, and you're literally releasing dopamine into your system. And obviously dopamine is good for ADHD profile. So so if there's something you've got to do, do the Zing method, and you'll have a release of dopamine.
Oh, that's such a simple thing, and you can kind of do that anywhere really as well,
can't you? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's all about sort of like one leg balance, switch both sides, and you just repeat the cycle. But I tell you, I've been doing that for like a few weeks now, and your balance just really, really improves.
Amazing.
And you can just call on that dopamine hit just whenever you need it.
Nigel is still with me, still chatting about neurodiversity. And we spoke about the common three earlier on. We're going to touch on a couple more, dyspraxia and dyscalculia.
Yeah.
What is dyspraxia? What kind of traits do you see with somebody that's got dyspraxia?
It basically affects movement and coordination. So it can look like clumsiness or tripping or bumping into things. What do you notice? I guess it's like it can be seen as like messy handwriting or an awkward grip of a pen, grip a pen, or taking longer to learn everyday sort of tasks.
Sure.
But what you find is like the strengths of people with dyspraxia they're often deeply creative and persistent.
Yeah,
I mean that comes across, and they're also great verbal communicators. And their problem solving is often, innovative.
Yeah, Yeah.
So you know, it's again, like we talked about earlier on, it's all about not looking at the issues, but looking at the strengths, because
superpowers.
You know, so this is a really powerful, you know, this very powerful upsides or strengths of someone with dyspraxia. Yeah. And if you've got dyspraxia or you have that, then taking breaks or breaking tasks into like smaller parts is a really really good way of dealing with things.
Yeah.
Or touch typing instead of handwriting can open doors as well.
Yeah. About dyscalculia.
Dyscalculia is really hard to say. it's sometimes called number dyslexia, and it sort of makes maths concepts hard to grasp.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's quite a lot of people out there who suffer from this. Mm. Over 6 million people. In fact, they say that one in four people has some form of challenge with mathematics, which is a big number.
I'm one of those.
Okay.
When I was at school, maths was a different language to me.
Yeah.
I could not get it.
Yeah.
And I would get really frustrated, and I would have it broken down into really small things and really simple, and I still could not get my head around it.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'm not a dyscalculia at all, but I definitely have got a thing with numbers for sure.
Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, numbers are just everything in our day-to-day lives. And, if you don't have this, it's good to sort of, you know, try and put yourself in the shoes of someone who is suffering from it and think that, you know, or has it, sorry, not suffering from it, has it. Mm. If you go along to, like, you know, you're trying to get a bus somewhere or a train, you can't read the timetable.
Or
you're...
Or on a till if you pay for something.
Or paying for your groceries or in a shop or just trying to add numbers up. It's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Absolutely.
But if you look at the strengths of this type, you know, they're dyscalculia people normally shine in words.
Yeah.
They're very very creative. Yeah. So again, there's so many positives of that. But it's worth like sort of bearing in mind what someone's going through if they have that condition.
Now, as a life coach, what are the main tools that you use to help with neurodiverse clients?
There are so many. I mean, the key is basically to recognize that if someone has a neurodiversity, then take that into account when you're working with them. Timeline therapy is really really important and really works well, where you take someone on a future visualization of where they want to be in 6 months, a year's time, where they'll see their ideal self or where they want to go. And again, that visualization is really powerful amongst some neurotypes. Also, there's something in NLP called parts therapy, where you get someone to actually look at the part that's causing the issue, and then change that part, bring that part more inside you, and say, well, then there's another part that doesn't want that issue, and so can you bring those parts together so they merge? That works really well. I mean, relaxation methods, meditation, being grateful, taking the mask off, and giving that space where you can take the mask off are really important. Mm. I mean, another thing which we do in therapy is look at is couples therapy. So you don't have to be a husband and wife to have couples therapy. It could be a parent and child with a neurotype, and literally just sitting down with your parent or with the child and just having that space where you can openly talk about. Yeah. You know, how I feel about you and how you feel about me, and looking for common ground, and that really is very very powerful. Yeah. Really really powerful, and it's giving people that space to talk and just be open and just get away from it all and just talk. So that's a really powerful side to it. So most of the tools you use in coaching and therapy can be used across the spectrum.
Differentiation, changing things up.
You just have to sort of, you just recognize, you know, who you're dealing with, yeah, and modify it for that, yeah. I guess.
Love that.
So, yeah, yeah.
Brilliant. Now, you're going to be coming back in a few weeks, and it's Sober October coming up, so we're going to focus it on is. That when you next come
Go in. Sober this October.
There we go.
I'll be 5 years alcohol-free in that. December.
That's just brilliant. Don't forget that Nigel's got a book out, Walking Back to Happiness, that you can get online through Amazon.
Yeah.
It's a great read, especially if you're heading into a Sober October. We'll talk about that much more when you come back. Thank you so much for coming in.
It's been lovely as usual.
It's always a pleasure.